We'll start all over again. I'm Beattie Cohn Fratos, and welcome again, my friends, to the Ask Beattie Show. As many of you know, who've been listening to me now on the Progressive Radio Network since 2013, it's really amazing how the time is gone when you're having a good time. I'm a psychotherapist, a sex therapist. I'm the author of the groundbreaking book on relationships for better, for worse, forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love. I am the advice columnist for Dan's Papers in the Hamptons in Palm Beach, a national speaker, national radio and television expert guest. And I have a private practice here in really beautiful, sunny, warm New York City, and also in East Hampton. And in a nutshell, people ask me all the time, so what is your show really all about? Well, in one word, it is really about empowerment. We talk about all of the things that we can actually do. And do is the key word here. It is an action word. It is a verb to improve the quality of our lives and our relationships. So, of course, we talk about mental health issues and relationships and sexuality. And again, how and what to do to maximize our physical and emotional well-being despite the stressors of life, and of course, despite the reality that we cannot change our history. So I have a mantra, and I actually have tried to live this mantra as best as I can in my own life for many, many years. And that mantra is acknowledge. We need to be willing to acknowledge. We then need to be willing to be serious about addressing and resolving as best as we can the things, the big things, the little things that continue to get in the way of our being able to really, really live a happy and joyful life. And what I really hope, I think maybe one thing that I have convinced you over the years is that we do not need to navigate this journey on our own. It is just way, way, way too difficult. And the very best thing that we can do when we're feeling stuck, when we feel that we're just going around in circles and the depression and the anxiety and all of the other issues that are really interfering and are being able to live a good and happy life, that we need to give ourselves permission. And I think that that's really the bottom line. It is about saying to ourselves that it is okay, it is more than okay to reach out to family and friends if you're lucky enough to have supportive family and friends, and if need be, to professionals. And when you're able to do this, this makes our life journey easier and less isolated and alienated and lonely. So I really, really hope that over the years you've been able to take this in. And when you're doing this, you're looking at your life and you're seeing that you're just not where you would like to be in your relationship, in your own life, in your professional life, that again, you will give yourself permission and reach out and ask for help. Well, again, for those of you who've been listening for all of these years, you know about my weekly How Are You Doing segment. And during this segment, I really ask you to take an honest, honest look at all of the things in your life that impact our emotional, our psychological, our psychiatric, and our physical well-being. So if we're starting with mental health issues, the real question is, you know, are you generally happy? Nobody is perfectly happy every day with your life, your relationships, and the general direction that you're going in. Or on the other hand, are you feeling that your bouts of depression and anxiety, and perhaps you are eating too much or drinking too much, that these are really, really beginning to negatively affect your life, your work, your relationships? And again, if you are experiencing symptoms of depression or anxiety or suicidal thoughts or gestures, And that these thoughts and feelings are simply not lifting. Are you willing to reach out and ask for help? Because we're going through difficult, difficult times in this country. People are losing their jobs. The dislocation that we've all experienced as a result of the pandemic, people are working at home. There seems to be less real connection, even though people will tell you they're on their screens, they're on their devices and phones and computers. I hear more and more from people, young and old, teens and seniors, feelings of alienation and loneliness and disconnection. So if you are feeling that way, if you are feeling that way today, of course, you can always call me right now on the Ask Beattie Show. And that number is 888-874-4888. And really, if you want to contact me, all you need to do is go to my BeattieCohn.com website, where there is a lot of information about me and, of course, the contact information. And I hope that I have convinced you that if you are suffering, and many, many, many people are suffering, that you don't need to suffer alone, and that reaching out and asking for help, and I know that sometimes it is really difficult to find good help, and I know that there are insurance limitations. And I also know that at times it is so difficult. You know, you'll call a social service agency and they'll put you on a waiting list. And this waiting list can be a very, very long waiting list. And again, if there's anything that I can do to help facilitate a referral or to help in any way, again, you could just go to my BeattieCohn.com website. And what about your relationships? How are your relationships? You know, I have a little slogan that I have mentioned many, many years, and that is, it's a reminder to say no to the things, the people, and places that steal our joy. So in looking at your relationships, perhaps you have a significant other, or looking at family relationships or collegial relationships or friend relationships, how would you rate these relationships on a scale of 1 to 10? 1 is horrible and 10 is wonderful. And of course, we need to remember that there is nothing perfect. And in all good relationships, there's going to be a lot of ups and downs. But again, in looking honestly, in assessing and evaluating the people who you interact with, the people who you have in your life, what would you say? Overall, are these relationships going well? Are they supportive? Are you surrounding yourself with people who are respectful, who are kind, who are compassionate, who are really there for you when you need them? And of course, hopefully you're going to be there for them as well if these relationships are going to be reciprocal and meaningful. And again, to make sure, and I really love this reminder, reminder to say no to the things, the people, and places that steal our joy. So only you know, you're in a position right now better than anyone to be able to look at all of the people who you do interact with in your life. And if there are issues, I am not suggesting at all that we throw away all the people in our lives, because there are invariably, there are always going to be ups and downs. But the real question, whether we're talking politically or whether we're talking personally, is do you care enough? And the people in your life, hopefully, they care enough as well to be willing to acknowledge and address and resolve as best as they can the problems that are interfering in your relationships. And those are the kind of people that we actually want in our life. It's not people who are denying or avoiding or blaming themselves or you for the problems. This is, I think, one of the reasons why when people routinely ask me, they'll say, Beattie, what do you really think are the most important ingredients that make or break a relationship. And over the years, I used to just kind of apologize because what I'm about to say, it's not sexy or it's not romantic. But the fact is that emotional communication and problem solving, these really are the most important ingredients that will either help our relationships to flourish despite the ups and downs that we all go through, or not. And this is why when we're getting to know people, whether or not we're talking about romantic relationships or business relationships, I think it's just so telling. It's so telling is that when there is a problem that will invariably arise sooner or later, that is when we find out so much about the other person or the other people in our life. Do they have the skill? Do they have the capability? Do they have the willingness? Do they care enough about you and about the relationship to be willing to really work things out? Or are they just going to exit? And it's very, very important for us to be able to assess this, because I don't want to have people in my life, I don't know about you, who are not willing to work things out when problems arise. And problems, as we all know, will surely arise on a very, very regular basis. So it's people who are truly committed to you, committed to the relationship. These are the kinds of people who we want in our lives. And sometimes it takes a little bit of time to be able to find out, because in the beginning of new relationships, typically things are wonderful and people are planning where they're going to go and what they're going to eat. And it's all really very exciting and wonderful. And then something happens. And it's when that something happens, that's the time we really find out so much about who this person who we think that we really care about or may really love, who this person really is or is not. So again, as unsexy and as unromantic as emotional communication and problem-solving skills are, those are, in fact, two main key ingredients that will make or break our relationships. And what about your professional life and financial stability? So many people that I'm actually treating are working from home, and I'm routinely asking them, I mean, what's it like? Although I also have been working from home and my practice here in New York City, I see very, very few people in person. Ironically, there are people who live a couple of blocks away from my office who still prefer to Zoom. And I'm not one of those people. I really prefer, and I really think it's a lot more effective therapeutically, when people are actually sitting in a room and have that personal face-to-face connection. But what about your work? If you're one of these people who's working from home, either full-time or part-time, are you still finding the job? Are you still finding the career mostly interesting and fulfilling? Are the people, your colleagues, even if you are working from home, are they stimulating and supportive? And what about your financial situation? You know, mortgage rates are just going through the roof right now. How are your finances? And are you being financially responsible? I know we live in a country where the bigger, better, more. I mean, that seems to be the way that so many people have bought into the notion of what is going to bring us happiness, the more money, the bigger house, the bigger, bigger, bigger. And yet in reality, that is not the case. I mean, certainly we all need and want a certain standard of living. But what I have found over the years, and I've had an opportunity to treat some of the wealthiest people in the United States, the bigger, better, more only goes so far. And what really makes a difference, and for those of you who've been listening in the last couple of weeks to the Ask Beanie Show, I've been talking about the research results from the Harvard Happiness Study, and it is clear across the board that it is not about the bigger house and the plane and the yacht and all of these extras that we are continually being told will make our lives so much better, that it's really our significant relationships. That's what really makes people happy. So again, in looking at what's going on financially and professionally, you know, where would you put yourself on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being pretty terrible and 10 being wonderful? Substance abuse. I mean, what we've seen over the last number of years with the pandemic, that we've seen a real increase of substance abuse of various different kinds. So again, I'm asking you to be honest with yourself. Are you concerned at all with any alcohol or prescription or over-the-counter use or abuse? And have you suffered any negative repercussions or consequences or relationship difficulties as a result of your possible substance abuse? And it's easy to make a lot of excuses for what we're doing and what we're not doing. And you may want to ask a close friend or partner to corroborate your own thoughts and feelings about this. And again, what about your physical health? How is it actually? Are you basically in good health? And have you had a complete physical, including blood work, within the last year? And do you follow your doctor's advice and take your medication if you happen to be on medication as prescribed? And do you have an exercise protocol? And of course, the protocol, as we all know, is to walk at least 30 minutes every single day, and to be willing and mindful of having a well-balanced diet. You know, last week on the show, I was actually talking about a number of studies. There was a review of over 1,000 studies indicating that exercise could be more effective than counseling or medication for depression. And I think that exercise should be incorporated into our lives, whether or not we suffer from depression or anxiety or other physical or psychiatric ailments. I know that for me, it makes all the difference in the world and has always been able to take that edge away. So again, we don't need to be sick. We don't need to be diagnosed. And yet it's very, very important to be mindful and also to be very, very self-disciplined about the things that we actually need to do, whether or not we are feeling like we want to do them at all. And this is where I think that it's important to sometimes just put our feelings aside and be smart and be intentional and be very, very clear about the things that we need to do, the things that we also need to avoid that help us to stay on a positive, constructive path. And I'll hear people tell me all the time, well, I don't feel like exercising, or I don't feel like seeing the doctor, even though I've been told that I need to go back and see the doctor a couple of times a year. So this is where what we feel really needs to take a back seat to what in fact is really in our best interest. What about your sleep patterns? Do you have difficulty falling or staying asleep? And research tells us that 7 to 8 hours of restful sleep can really make all the difference in the world. I don't know about you. If I don't have a good night's sleep, I am not on my game. And what about sex? Sexual orientation and gender. Are you mostly satisfied with the quantity and quality of your sex life. And when it comes to sexual orientation and gender, and it is so great that we are now talking about all of these issues in a way that previously were just put in a closet. And are you living an authentic life in terms of your gender and sexual orientation? And as you're listening to me ask these questions right now, I would give anything to be in your living rooms or being in your offices and really hearing what your responses are. So overall, if we are looking at the umbrella of self-care, in summing this segment up, I mean, do you actually feel that you are taking good care of yourself physically and mentally and spiritually and emotionally and then psychologically? And do you feel that you're living, because this is all part of self-care, do you feel that you're living a life of purpose and spiritual satisfaction and giving back? You know, I was walking around New York City this morning, just preparing for the show mentally. For me, this is a really good way to prepare. I walk and I look at nature and I look at the trees. And of course, today the sun is shining and things are really starting to blossom. And it really sort of hit me that we spend so much time talking about what we want and what we're going to acquire. Rather than, and the two do not need to be mutually exclusive, rather than what are we giving? What are we doing? How are we contributing to society or to anybody else's life other than our own? And I know that for myself, I've been a practicing psychotherapist and sex therapist now for over 35 years. And it has been a joy. The giving has been a great, great joy. And I have met people, I have treated people from every walk of life who I never would have met in my own little world. Of course, my own little world began in Winnipeg, Canada. So again, it's not just about us and what we're going to acquire and what we're going to want, but in the giving, in some of these small little ways, opening a door for someone, smiling at someone, maybe helping somebody with their parcel. Those little things can make our days richer and better in ways that you never quite dream possible. So again, let's think about it not always having to be all about us, right? And if you're looking at goals, you have clarity. Are you on track in terms of your goals? And do you believe that they are realistic and achievable? And even though you have yet to fully achieve them, do you feel that you are on the right path to eventually reach them? And again, we don't need to take this journey on our own. So I've asked you the tough questions as I ask you the same questions every single week. And it's very difficult at times to be honest with ourselves and ask ourselves, yes, are we on track or are we on the other end of things, on a very either destructive, self-destructive, or self-sabotaging path? And yet it is our avoidance and denial and blame and self-blame and defensiveness that really keep us in a downward spiral. So in asking yourself all these questions, and I'm assuming that you're going to be honest with yourself, hopefully, that it takes a lot of courage to be willing to deal, to acknowledge, address, and resolve as best as we can the things that are not going well and the things that continue to get in the way of our life. So it's a decision that we need to make with help, without help, because if we refuse to step up to the plate and confront our issues, our demons, the old ones, the new ones, it becomes increasingly, increasingly more difficult to fully enjoy your life. So again, I would do anything, anything right now to be in your presence and really hear what you have to say. You know, I wrote a column, my most recent column, which is going to actually be published in a couple of weeks for Dance Papers, because as I mentioned, I am the advice columnist for Dance Papers in the Hamptons and also in Palm Beach. And the heading of the article, I think it's really apropos some of the things that I have just been talking about. The heading is Lessons to be Learned or Not, okay? We all know that making mistakes is a part of living, right? Unavoidable and recurring. We spend too much money. We neglect our health. We drink too much. We engage with toxic people who invariably will hurt us and disappoint us and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And you can probably add a lot more from your own list. So having said that, the reality, of course, is that to err is human. We're reminded we are all cracked vessels. Nobody is perfect. Nobody is living the perfect life. But the real question, though, is what can we learn from these mistakes, whether we will continue to repeat them? And that is such a central question, or at least to a certain extent, become masters of them. So are we going to continue to do the same thing over and over and over and over that is not in our best interest, or are we going to pivot? Are we going to make some changes? Are we going to be self-disciplined and catapult ourselves onto a different path? And as we all know, it takes a lot of courage and inner strength and willpower to break out. Now, listen to what I am saying here. It takes a lot of willpower to break out of our mistake-driven comfort zone, in quotes, that are not in our best interest. Hey, it takes a lot of courage, inner strength, and willpower to break out of our mistake-driven comfort zones that are not in our best interest. And I want to tell you about a patient of mine, and this is a case history. This is all true. Of course, I've changed some of the details to protect this woman's confidentiality and anonymity. So let's call her Lauren. She is 40 years old. And she contacted me several months ago requesting individual therapies. She told me that she'd been reading my Ask Beattie columns in Dance Papers for the past year, and she finally made the decision to reach out and ask for help. Now, Lauren had been married to Jeff, a wealthy New York City cardiologist, for the past 11 years. And she told me that she needed help sorting out her life. So she read the column for the past year, finally made a decision to make the call. But let me tell you a little bit about Lauren. Lauren is a talented, well-known author and public speaker, and she's really beautiful inside and out. And prior to her marriage, she routinely traveled the world, giving presentations and workshops to sold-out audiences. And if you really knew who she was, you would say, oh, yes, I know all about her. However, after her marriage, her husband insisted that she not travel out of town for speaking engagements, explaining that he wanted her with him as much as possible. And I'm sure initially it was a great compliment to Lauren that her husband loved her so much and didn't want her to be, you know, away from him. However, it didn't quite turn out like that. And although Lauren was uncomfortable with his request, what do you think she did? She nonetheless agreed. Her husband husband, and this is moving along in their marriage, he also insisted that she dressed in a more feminine and sexy way. And let me tell you, Lauren is gorgeous and routinely would criticize her arty and bohemian friends. And as time went on, he became more and more critical, and Lauren began to live more and more of a very lonely and isolated life. And although she tried to convince herself that she was happy, she was plagued with migraine headaches and unexpected aches and pains and depression and anxiety, and she was embarrassed and ashamed to let her family and friends know about the reality of her life, since to the world, it appeared that she had it all and was living the American dream. So Lauren and her husband, they lived in an enormous house on the water in East Hampton, beautiful East Hampton. She had a full-time housekeeper, personal trainer, chef, unlimited money to spend on cars and designer clothes. Her husband encouraged her. Here we see the controlling husband encouraging her to have a number of plastic surgery procedures, which she did not want to have. He wanted her to look younger, sexier, with an occasional nip and tuck. So Lauren obviously had lost herself. And what was going on behind closed doors, she was drinking more and more and had seriously considered suicide. So when she did try to assert herself, her husband would become verbally abusive. He would put her down and occasionally would threaten to hit her. So again, lessons to be learned or not. So Lauren began her treatment with me, and she was very, very fearful that her husband was going to find out that she was working with me, and always made sure that our appointments took place when he was in New York City. Now, let's look at her background. She grew up in a wealthy Long Island home with a very domineering, abusive father and passive mother. And I know you can probably guess, you know, where this dynamic and how this dynamic has continued to play itself out. Her father controlled her mother's every move and ruled the home with an iron fist. And Lauren learned, she learned at a very early age to not upset her father. And she also learned, you know, talk about lessons not to be learned, but she also learned that her wants and needs and feelings were unimportant. And she mostly lived her life wanting to please others. Now, her saving grace, she was a great student. She went to college. She went to graduate school. Her saving grace had always been her successful career. So Lauren was working with me twice a week. And after 4 months of twice weekly therapy, she found the inner strength to acknowledge to herself that she did not love her husband and that she wanted a divorce. And this was something that I really supported. And she was also, because we talked about, well, do you want to try marriage counseling? But she told me very, very definitively that she was not interested in marriage counseling. And what was wonderful about what Lauren learned was that she realized that she had been repeating her family history and dynamics and was no longer willing to make the mistake of living as a passive victim. And I was so, so, so proud of her. So without her husband's knowledge, she hired a divorce attorney and served him with papers. And you can imagine how taken aback he was, although I never did meet him. It appeared as if Lauren was finally on the right path. With a $5 million settlement and a new condo, she was ready to begin the next chapter of her life. Very, very exciting. However, Lauren arrived at one of her therapy sessions and told me that she had recently met a man on the beach who showered her with compliments and companionship. And you can understand, after living with a man for 11 years who was controlling and abusive and pretty disgusting, okay, that she was going to be someone who would love, I mean, we would have all loved to be showered with compliments and companionship. The fact that he was married was unimportant to her or to him. And this was something we talked about. He was unavailable. He was married. He was a father. Okay. But she was not going to listen. She was attracted to him. She was just so happy with all of the compliments and his companionship that, you know, she chose to do what she was going to do and not listen to my good advice. He told her that he had several Ivy League postdoctorate degrees and a Swiss bank account, and they began to spend more time together. And Lauren was in the process of deluding herself once again, believing that he was the one for her. And I tried. I really, really tried. People who know me, they know that I'm very directive and I don't just sit back and say, how are you feeling? That I had a lot to say about this new relationship. I tried to show her that a married, unavailable man full of all sorts of possible untrue stories, which he really knew nothing about, was a recipe for disaster, but she was nonetheless, she was determined to follow her heart. So what happened? What happened to Lauren and her therapy with me? Well, she dropped out of therapy and I never heard from her again. And she chose, you talk about lessons to be learned or not, she chose to jump from the frying pan into the fire. And I think of her often and I wonder how she is doing. And that's really the question. Have we learned anything from our mistakes, or are we inadvertently, consciously, or unconsciously going to continue to repeat them? And that is the question. That is the question that we all have to ask ourselves. I mean, if we're looking at marriage as an example, okay, the divorce statistics. And for those of you who've been listening to me for all these years, you will not be surprised by the statistics. But look at this. The divorce statistics for first marriage is 48%, almost 50%. The divorce rate for second marriages, right, 67%. So after one marriage and two marriages, we hope that we've learned something, that there are some really positive lessons to be learned, that there are positive takeaways that will enable us to live a better and happier life. But as it so happens, the divorce rate for third marriages is between 72 and 74%. So again, lessons to be learned or not. And I worried about her, excuse me, a lot, because she was clearly, you know, she was clearly someone who was so needy and needed to believe that this person who she really didn't know was the one. And I can just imagine, you know, up the road, the kinds of challenges and the kind of difficulties that he probably was going to be experiencing with you. Moving along to another area that is very, very, very concerning and should be concerning to all of us, and that is childhood suicide. And childhood suicide is on the rise. And of course, the question, like with any other issue, with any other problem, is what to do. Now, Dr. Andrew Solomon, who he was a guest on my show at the end of last year, he wrote in the New Yorker magazine, he wrote an article called The Mystifying Rise of Child Suicide. And he said that he hopefully thought that this is going to be a wake-up call for parents, schools, pediatricians, and mental health professionals. The article pointed out that between 1950 and 1988, the proportion of adolescents 15 to 19 who killed themselves dramatically quadrupled. Between 2007 and 2017, the number of children, now listen to this age, ages 10, little kids of 10 years of age to 14 who did so more than doubled. In 2020, according to the nation's Center for Disease Control and Prevention, suicide claimed the lives of more than 500 children between the ages of 10, they're babies, and 14, and 6,000 young adults between the ages of 15 to 21. So what Andrew Solomon said, it makes it as common a cause of death as those who lose their lives in car crashes. Now, the CDC, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, also found that during the first 7 months of COVID, of the COVID lockdown, U.S. hospitals experienced a 24% increase in mental health-related emergency visits of children aged, and guess what? Ages 5 to 11, and a 31% increase for those aged 12 to 17. So even though that we know that the sooner depressed or suicidal children receive treatment, the more likely they are to recover, children remain radically undertreated. And research shows that only 1 out of 5 American adolescents who end up in a hospital after attempting suicide is transferred to a mental health facility for further needed treatment. And even more shockingly, according to the National Institute of Mental Health, almost 2/3 of the 3 million American adolescents who experienced major depression in 2020 received no treatment at all. And here's another article. A recent article about suicide amongst teens and young adults reaches highest level since 2000. The rate of U.S. adolescents and young adults dying of suicide has reached its highest level in nearly two decades, according to a report published in the Journal of the American Medical Association. In 2017, there were 47% more suicides among people aged 15 to 19 than in the year 2000. And overall, there are 36% more people ages 20 to 24 living in the U.S. today than at the turn of the century. So with more than 6,200 suicides among people ages 15 to 24, suicide ranked at the leading cause of death for people in that age group. So we can go on and talking about the suicides and the suicide rates and how the rates are going up. But again, the question is what to do. Now, I have been very, very privileged to be doing some consulting at East Hampton High School in East Hampton, New York. In fact, this is the second semester that I am there. I'm there every Thursday for an entire day where I have an opportunity to talk to the children along with Mr. Jim Stewart, who is the head of the health department at East Hampton High School, an amazing man, an amazing teacher who has taught at this school for over 45 years. So we have been partnering and team teaching together and, helping the children navigate the world of relationships and mental health. And he brings in all kinds of resources, including the retreat and, other organizations, so that the children, that they have a really, really substantial, strong takeaway in terms of learning about, a lot of the ins and outs of mental health treatments, learning about relationships and communication. He really has an amazing program. And one thing is very, very clear to me at this particular high school. They have, of course, a school psychologist and a guidance counselor and various different school social workers. I think they're about 5 or 6 full-time staff. But as Andrew Solomon has recommended, and I am completely on board with his recommendation, I feel that given what is going on in the world of teens and teen depression and teen suicide, that all the schools in this country should be putting in resources, money, that means money, and professional mental health resources, so that we can early on, beginning in first grade, that we're able to then identify and intervene and treat the kids who are exhibiting a variety of different kinds of issues, depression and anxiety and substance abuse of various different kinds and learning problems. And what a wonderful, wonderful way for art to be spending our time and our money, where we are starting early. We understand the problems that are developing over the course of our children's ages. And yet we're waiting so long, and we're talking about all of these horrendous statistics. And yet early prevention could make all of the difference in the world. And this was a program that I was one of the directors of in Greater Montreal. I was one of the three directors of the Greater Montreal School Social Services Program. So that in every single school, every elementary school, every junior high school, every high school in Greater Montreal, there was a team. And the team consisted of a guidance counselor and a psychologist, and of course the principal and vice principal and school social workers were the teachers. They were the first line to really be with the children every single day, and they could see the kids that were struggling, the kids that were acting out, the kids that had no friends, the kids that were too quiet, the kids that were failing their grades. They had the opportunity every single day to really get to know these children. And when they saw that the kids were struggling in a variety of ways, they were able to make a referral. Now, maybe it was a referral to a school psychologist, where there needed to be some academic testing, where perhaps ruling out a variety of different learning problems was something that they were able to find out about early on, rather than have a child go through school where they had undetected learning problems of various different kinds. If there were emotional problems, the teacher was able to make a referral. Maybe the child was just having a bad couple of days. Better to err on the side of caution. And in this way, it was a wonderful, wonderful program where really no child was left behind. And I know that when I started off, before becoming one of the directors, I was a school social worker, and I was assigned to two or three different schools. And I would make home visits, and the parents would come into the school. And it was a real family affair, so that we were all working together to make sure that what was being done was in the best interest of the child. And we were not labeling the children. We were not stigmatizing the children. We were not causing problems for the children or the family. But what we were able to do, which seems to be becoming so much more difficult these days, if I hear one more time that the school systems in America don't have the money, I mean, really, you know, how are we spending our money? What resources are really important? And if it is not our children, if we are not prepared to put our money and our resources into helping our children flourish in this country, the rich, the poor, the middle class, I mean, what are we doing? I mean, what are we really doing? So again, I think that as parents, This is something that perhaps, you know, you might do if you have children in the school system where you could become active in a parent-teacher association meeting or become an advocate or do something very, very concrete that will help our children and that will help them flourish academically and emotionally and socially and psychiatrically and psychologically. Because if we don't, and if these statistics continue, I mean, it's very, very, very frightening to continue to cite these same statistics every single week. And there are more and more and more articles. I have a piece here that I'm looking at that was in the New York Times, again, talking about mental health, the crisis, the urgent, the need, you know, that requires creative solutions. And of course, encouraging parents, encouraging the adults to be willing to have hard conversations with your teens, even if initially they are reluctant to speak with you. And what I have found in being in the schools, of course, in my Montreal days, and also in my East Hampton consulting days, the kids are eager to talk. All you have to do is sit down and try and engage them on a human level, and they will tell you how they were feeling. They will tell you what's wrong. They will tell you what's right in their lives. But we as adults, we need to make the time and engage with our kids and engage with the teens, whether we're talking about in the school system or whether or not we are talking about what's going on at home. In fact, there was another article in the Times. The headline was, "Are kids anxious because their parents are?" And one of the paragraphs, it mentioned that to heal our children, we need to heal ourselves. And of course, parents these days are so overwhelmed with so many different things going on with jobs, with money, with marital issues, just living in today's society. It's something that's, you know, it's not easy. And again, you know, I'm reading every single week about the same statistics, the same concerns, the fact that three girls every single day want to kill themselves. I mean, we understand the statistics, we understand the numbers, but what we don't seem to be able to do in any real concerted way, and maybe it's because we really don't care. Because again, when people say there isn't the money, there is the money for the things that we want the money to go for and to go to, right? If we have all the money in the world for weapons, we can certainly take that money and we can put that money into hiring resources, mental health resources in the schools for our children. So again, it depends. It really depends on our priorities. And, you know, what I'm really, really hoping and that these numbers are starting to politically worry our educational institutions and systems throughout the country. And maybe the administrators, maybe the educators, maybe the senators of this country are worried about votes. And if that's going to be the motivation to get people to start to spend the money and put the necessary resources into the school so that we can early on identify and save children from serious mental health issues throughout their lives, then so be it. I don't care what the reasons are. I'm just hoping that people finally who are in positions of power are finally able to get to a place in their lives where they care enough to do the right thing. And I am looking at the clock. on my computer here, and it is 3:55. And there were many, many other things that I really wanted to talk with you about that we will talk about next week. Big story unrelated to kids and suicide in the Times is cancer ruined sex lives, silence, where doctors who are treating people, women who are going through cancer, rarely, if ever, engage and are willing to talk about the sex lives and how people's sex lives absolutely suffer as a result of cancer and medications and treatments. And that's something that I really do want to talk about next week. And again, problem solution. This show is not just about identifying problems. I mean, that's really step number one. But step number two is that we all have to put our heads together and figure out ways about what to do to change the trajectory of so many things, of so many ills in this country that are not working, and ills in your own life that are not working. So again, it's about problem solution, acknowledge, address, and try to resolve as best as possible the things that get in the way of our lives and our relationships. So again, I want to thank you all so much for listening, as you do every single week, to the Ask Beattie Show. And I want to leave you with my two weekly messages. The first, of course, and I really want you to take this in, is that you need to be mindful to do everything possible on a daily basis. And for some people, maybe it's reminding themselves on an hourly basis to live your life in ways that are in your best interest. And what that means is asking yourself routinely, is this good for me? Is this something that is nurturing for me? Is this something that is helpful for me? Is this something that is constructive for me? And of course, secondarily, we all need to do a much, much, much better job in learning to accept each other and love each other. So again, thank you so much for listening. It's over 10 years now since I first met Dr. Gary Null, and we sat down together at the old offices on Broadway in New York City, and that we decided that I was going to be hosting the Ask Beattie Show here on the Progressive Radio Network. So I hope you have a very good rest of the day. And by the way, I hope you had a really good Easter and Passover. And I will talk with you next week. So take care, love yourself, and let's find ways to love each other. Bye-bye, everybody.